Welcome to Pilgrim Talk. Today, Pilgrim Talk is a little bit different. This is David O'Rourke in the absence of Anthony Brabazon. And you may recall from time to time we have talked about that place in the Phoenix Park where I stop sometimes on the way to work to get some fellowship with the Lord and to hear what he's saying and just to be with him and to enjoy his presence. Well, today that's where I am. And looking around me in this sort of breezy but fresh and bright and sunny morning, it's such a strange experience, because usually I'm here on my very own. But I just want to welcome you this morning, just to join in whatever actually happens here, and just to be with me if you want for these few minutes. I love coming to this place. It seems like I connect not just with the Lord, but with so much of nature that's all around. Everything that's living out here. I love seeing the deer as they're moving around early in the morning and noticing, you know, they just don't think about, well, what does today hold for us? Where am I going to get something to eat? How am I going to pay the electricity bill? Never even crosses their mind. Life just flows to them, and everything they need just flows to them. And it reminds me, I suppose, of the fact that, you know, we're also taken care of in a way that even though we can have all these struggles and difficulties that we have to overcome during the day, that, you know, life flows to us too. It's not something that we make happen. In fact, we can't control our next heartbeat. And yet it flows to us freely, day by day. And all for a reason, you know, because these days are days of our opportunity. When Jesus was on the earth, he said, "I came that they might have life and have it to the full." And when Jesus spoke those words about life, you know, he wasn't using the word that normally describes the life that flows to us through heartbeat and through the capacity to have oxygen in the air transformed into energy that keeps us going by processes that, you know, aren't really totally fully understood. Jesus wasn't talking about that kind of life, because he used the Greek word was Zoe, which is a different word that means life. And it means life as God knows it. It means spiritual life. It means victorious life. It means eternal life. And Jesus, you know, said, "I came that they might have that quality of life." And if you've come to Jesus and if you've given your heart to him and received the forgiveness that he purchased on the cross for you, and if you've become born of the Spirit, you know, you have received that kind of life. It's in you. That's what energizes your spirit. You know, the day that you suddenly woke up to a relationship with God, when you surrendered your life to him, that was the type of life that makes that kind of relationship possible. And, you know, you recognize, I'm sure, if that's been your path in life, that there was a moment when a relationship with God became a reality to you, not just something that you tried to make happen, but something that just spontaneously erupted in your spirit, and you came into fellowship with God. We're talking here about eternal life. And, you know, for us Christians, it's good for us to be reminded again and again, and after that again and again, that this spiritual life is in us. That eternal life, eternity doesn't start when you die. For you, eternity has already started. Heavenly life doesn't start when you get to heaven. Because heaven, the life of heaven, has been deposited in your spirit already. And I suppose for me and for many of us Christians, you know, there are so many, many ways in which we lose track of that. That, you know, we revert to this thinking where we're thinking, oh my goodness, I wish that I had a bit of spiritual life. My goodness, I wish I could be stronger. I wish I could be different. I wish I could be A, B, and C. But we don't realize that, you know, whatever was the greatest experience we ever had spiritually, that's just the reality of where things are at for us now. It's just that we don't always experience it. We're not always aware of it. Fact is, we lose sight of it. I've often wondered, you know, why that should be. Why that should be. Jesus said, I came that they might have life and have it abundantly. And, you know, but often that's just not my experience. So why is it not my experience? Well, I like to think of it in terms of the problem or the difficulty that I have in externalizing in my life this eternal life that is inside me. Because externalizing has to do with behavior. Externalizing has to do with how I act in the here and now. And of course, it's very obvious that how we act in the here and now is, it comes from what we are internally. So what's the behavior of eternal life? Well, it can be summed up in just one word. And the word is love. And people think, oh my goodness, here we go again. Another rant of pious platitudes. Love. Yeah, well, that's, you know, easy to say, isn't it? And also the fact that, you know, the world thinks about love in so many different ways. And we use that word to describe so many different things that are so very different. Some of them have nothing really to do with love at all. So it can be very confusing. So, okay, let's define love. All right, here we go. David's instant definition of love. The way Jesus was. That's love. The way Jesus lived. That's love. How ultimately his internal processes took him to the place where he was willing to lay down his life, to give his life on the cross to save humanity from their sin. That's love. That's love. And of course, when we think about love in those terms, then we can see that that kind of sacrifice, that, you know, the principle, I'm not talking necessarily about, you know, physically dying on a, you know, today or tomorrow. But I'm talking about laying down our lives for the benefit and well-being of others. Well, that's a steep call. And it's so much easier to try to interpret eternal life in other ways, in ways that don't challenge our preoccupation with holding on to our own lives. You know, I've studied psychology and that kind of stuff, and I find that universally in psychological literature and the theorists and authors who describe the human condition, it's taken as a given that our own well-being and our own advancement, our own self-actualization, as it's called, is the purpose of our lives. It's taken for granted. And so everything that we see and everything that we hear, all we listen to on the news and all we're encouraged with, and the heroes that are held up before us, are people who espouse that particular view of life. That's why the gospel just cuts right across that, goes completely in the opposite direction, and says that the behavior that demonstrates true humanity is love. So, you know, we've become Christians and we become dimly aware of these things. But unless we actually see very clearly how radical this Christian call is to us internally, how it cuts to the core, how it cuts across everything that we have lived for up to now, unless we actually see that very clearly, what tends to happen is that we Christianize our self-service. We Christianize our self-orientation. And we start to talk about things like my call, my ministry. And we come to this idea that, you know, Jesus wants to fulfill this internal orientation for the actualization and aggrandizement of myself. And that is a distorted understanding of the gospel. Because Jesus said, I came that they might have life and have it in abundance. And what he was talking about was the capacity to be like him, to love as he loved. Very challenging. I find this extremely challenging, extremely challenging. And just when I feel like I'm making a little bit of progress in some way, just when I find that there's something I can hold up in front of myself and say, good man, David, you're making progress here, then I trip over something else. And you know, I found that very discouraging for a long time, but then I realized, well, no, let's not be discouraged about that, because that just means that God is not giving up on me. That God is not saying, well, that's about the best we can do with David, you know, so let's just call it a day. That's not how God sees it. You know, as soon as I overcome in some area, become victorious in some area, you know, God makes sure the next step is right there in front of me, because, you know, whatever I'm going to be when I get to be with him, that will be determined here on this earth, how much I embrace this process of transformation. That's the reality. So that means it's encouraging you know, when we continue in these struggles, because God is not giving up on us. I spoke to a friend of mine there a while ago, I'll just finish up with this, as we met just before fellowship, I met him in the doorway and I said, straight to his face, I said, "Is it war?" He looked a bit startled and he thought for a second and he said, "Yes, it's war." And I said, "Is it unrelenting?" And he said, "Yes, it's unrelenting." And I said, "Is it all around?" And he said, "Yes, it's on every side." And I said, "Good, that means I'm in the right place." Anyway, look forward to talking to you again. Next time will probably be Ant and myself, although we never really know. So it's been good to do this. It's the first time I've ever tried anything like this. I've enjoyed it. Hope you have too. God bless you.
You've been listening to Pilgrim Talk. You know, if you were blessed by what you heard just now, we have a whole load of archived issues which you can find on Alien on a Mission website and look for the archive.
Lord, you are my righteousness, the one who sanctifies my life, shepherd and my guide, banner of deliverance, warrior and my defense, in your secret place I